This is episode 14 of the Bad Apples Linux Cast. My name is Klaatu. I am your friendly host. Today we're going to talk about Verizon and how awful their internet service is, how to hack around their horrible default Westel modem that they're sending people, and we'll get to listener feedback, because I actually do have listener feedback. We'll talk about some other stuff, probably, so let's get started. Actually, before we really get started, I should probably explain some things. I was notably absent over the holidays to some people. If you're in IRC, you might have noticed I was not in IRC for a good 12, 14 days. I was also supposed to help out on the Hacker Public Radio Christmas episode, as well as the first episode of the sort of second season, I guess, of Hacker Public Radio. Didn't happen. Basically, I had gone away for the holidays upstate to visit some friends, and they just did not have internet connection that was reliable at all, especially for someone using Linux, and I will explain this in a moment. This ties into the Verizon issue that I wanted to discuss. Yeah, I didn't have reliable internet connection. I was on a little bit here and there whenever I could hack around their issues or get out to a cyber cafe to get on the information superhighway. But it was very infrequent, just because, as you can imagine, holidays are fairly busy. And so that's why I wasn't around. Was not intentional. I was really hoping to be online a lot more. Although I did try to tell people that were counting on me, you know, beforehand, that I might, you know, I couldn't guarantee anything. And I'm glad I did. I didn't really expect any problems, but there were problems, so I am happy that I gave a heads up. So if you emailed me and I haven't responded, that would be why. I just wasn't online for you know, almost 2 weeks. How did I survive? It actually wasn't so bad. I had a lot of friends I was visiting. You know, you live. So it wasn't that bad, but it's definitely nice to be back online. So that's why I wasn't around, if you noticed. And if you didn't notice, no worries. I don't need people asking me where I was. I'm just saying, for those who did notice, that's where I was. So Verizon offers internet service, apparently, in some areas. And they are, you know, they're not Comcast, so I figured, I was helping a friend get her internet set up, and I suggested her steering clear of Comcast, and she ended up going with Verizon, and seemed fine with me. They sent her the little modem that they send people, and from the very, very beginning, there were a lot of issues, and this friend is a Windows and a Mac user, does not use Linux. And it came to me as a great shock and surprise when I tried to set up the service that it wanted to, that it insisted. I mean, first I tried on my Linux, my EEE PC. That's what I had on me, Debian. First I tried there, and I fired up Firefox, and it sends you to this default setup page to activate your account or something. And right away it told me that I needed to be using Internet Explorer. And it gave me a little link to go download Internet Explorer, which would be quite a feat, you know, to get Internet Explorer, the Linux version, right? I mean, yeah, I know, I could probably do it in Wine, whatever. The point is that when you're signing up for an internet service and you're told you need to be using Internet Explorer, sort of red flags kind of go up right away. Okay, so couldn't hack around that initially, so I went over to her Mac and tried Firefox. Initially, I tried it with the user agent switcher so that it looked like I was using Internet Explorer. It turned out that that didn't matter. So you just use Firefox, and it takes you to this setup page. And right away, it wants you to download a Firefox plugin. I'm not kidding you. It wants to install a Firefox plugin in order for you to set up your Verizon account. bizarre. Not only that, but it wouldn't let me on. I mean, it wouldn't install the plugin correctly. It would restart Firefox, and the plugin wouldn't be installed, and so it would automatically attempt to install it again and force you to restart Firefox again. It was really strange, and it was not working. So I called Verizon, not very happy, and this was late at night, because I, of course, got off the plane, visited her, figured, sure, it's late at night, but I can set this up, no problem, it'll take me 10 seconds. Famous last words, right? So I call Verizon, it's late at night, I get transferred to I don't even know where. People the customer service was shockingly bad. I mean, just really, really mean-spirited. They kept calling me ma'am, like I was a girl, and I kept telling them I was a sir. Not that I care that much, but, you know, it's just weird when they keep calling you madam, even though at the end of every sentence I was like, and I am a sir, not a madam. I said that, like, at the end of every sentence, and he kept calling me madam. I couldn't understand it. It was like he was trying to annoy me. Or maybe not. Maybe he was just an idiot. But, so he couldn't help me, and he initially, you know, once he found out that I was using Linux... No, I told him I was using Mac, and so he transferred me to the Mac department, supposedly, but really he hung up. So I called back, and the girl I got next, I just told her I was using Linux, and she literally apologized. She said, I'm sorry that the system you are using is running Linux. That's what she said. I couldn't believe it. It was something like out of a textbook case, you know? And I was shocked. But I was going to maintain, you know, some semblance of rationale and reason, and I kind of got through it, but she couldn't help me, and, you know, so basically I called it a night finally, and in the morning I called back and got, like, I guess their normal tech support people, and they were a little bit more helpful. They were certainly a lot less rude. Still not very excited to hear that I was running Linux. I went through a couple of different phone calls. At one point, I just lied and said I was using Windows, and, you know, whatever they told me, I just translated so that it worked on Linux. You know, I knew what they, you know, you don't have to be a genius. I mean, if they're saying go to my network settings or whatever, you just figure, okay, so I'm about to set an IP address here, or I'm about to choose a connection. You know, you can kind of translate it in your head and then do more or less what they're telling you to do, just with ifconfig or whatever. So I did that, and eventually the solution ended up being that you have to just get around this stupid idea that you need to install a Firefox plugin or download a special program for Internet Explorer in order to get onto the interwebs. And so there's this hidden page somewhere, and it's, if you need to know it, it's 192.168.0.1. That's obviously the modem's IP address, /Verizon/redirect.htm. This takes you to a hidden page, and I think you might have to put in your little modem password, which is either admin admin or admin password. I forget. They don't seem to know either. You just have to try both, and whichever works, works. And then you click disable. You disable the redirect page, and then suddenly you're online. There's no need to install any fancy Firefox plugin that doesn't work with Linux. There's no need to get Internet Explorer or a special little Verizon.exe. It just stops asking you for that nonsense, and it gives you an IP address. The modem has some kind of embedded system in it. I don't know what it is, but it's got a whole little control panel in there. It's doing a lot of weird stuff, you know, that I don't think a modem really has any business doing. Seems to really complicate matters. I was not very impressed. It eventually worked to some degree. It worked on her systems really well. Didn't seem to work so well on my Linux machine once I put the router on it. The theory is at this point that the modem was bad because the signal just kept dropping. It was not a pleasant experience, and it unfortunately kept occurring the entire holiday break. It just, and supposedly they were sending her a new modem but it wasn't really working. I mean, they weren't really sending it, you know, so it was one of those things. So eventually, I guess she's going to get a new modem, and she's going to try that out. And if that fails, which, you know, unfortunately, I have a feeling it's just not going to work very well, because of the experience that we had, you know, I told her she should probably just, unfortunately, switch to someone else. And I think the only other game in town is Comcast, and I've already done a segment on Comcast, how much I hate them. But what are you going to do? This is a person who doesn't want to have to think about the internet. She doesn't want to have to set up her modem. And it's a real pity that that's the way that they chose to do it. You know, they're targeting some mythical, you know, Windows-using audience who's going to open up Internet Explorer of all browsers to recommend and to support, primarily support. That's what they're going to use. They're going to open up Internet Explorer and install whatever little Verizon.exe thing so that they always have to go through their little Verizon homepage. You know, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's as if though we learned nothing from AOL and the likes of those kinds of little, you know, providers, those little gateways, you know? And I guess that's essentially what the modem is acting as, like a gateway. And it's just a really, really bad implementation of the interweb experience. So not cool. But if you do end up with a Westel modem, model 6100F as in Frank, if you get one of those and you're having a hard time, just know that it's 192.168.0.1/Verizon/redirect.htm. Put in admin password or admin and disable. And that will bypass the gateway portion of the modem. Whether or not that modem is worth anything it kind of remains to be seen. But good luck. Hopefully that'll help someone struggling with Verizon and Westel modems. Okay, let's see. So I actually have quite a bit of listener feedback. I don't have a whole lot to discuss on my own. But one email I got was from someone you might know as Deep Geek. Deep Geek is a very active hacker within you'll know from Hacker Public Radio. So he's a really smart guy from what I can tell. Really smart. And he was listening to some of my back episodes, so that's one more listener I should probably write down on my master list. And yes, I'm making a master list since I don't actually track my listeners. You know, I don't look at like how many people are downloading episodes and things like that, like with web stats and stuff. I have decided to make a manual list of everyone I know is listening to the show. So if you have emailed me, you are on my master list. And so far I'm up to, I think, the proverbial 11, but I'm adding to it every day, so I'll try to keep you posted. But this guy's number 12, Deep Geek, is a listener now, even if he never listens again. But, yes, so the thing that he was talking about was PowerPC architecture. And he has some really great thoughts, and he is talking about stuff that I have no clue about. I know that there is a difference between the RISC architecture and, you know, the x86 architecture. And he is theorizing or saying that, as far as he knows, like AMD and Intel have a certain, as he says, riskiness to them. You know, they do incorporate some of the advantages that the RISC people have talked about. And you'll have seen possibly some of this kind of big debate back around, I don't know, let's just say 2000-ish, when a lot of the advertising stuff was talking about, Gort used to talk about this a lot to me. They were talking about things like, you know, okay, sure, the the megahertz measurement of, you know, this Intel, this Pentium 4, let's say, was, I don't know, let's, or maybe a Pentium 3, is, and this is going to betray my complete lack of knowledge of Intel processors, let's say that this Pentium 3 was like 400 megahertz. But this G3 chip, you know, even though it's measured at 333 megahertz, it's actually faster than the Intel 400 megahertz because it processes things in gigaflops rather than in, you know, whatever else. So it's like this whole, it's a different way of processing things. And unfortunately, I have no clue about that kind of thing. I really don't. I could tell you benchmark tests in rendering video, for sure. I can talk pretty a lot about that. But in terms of like risk theory versus, you know, x86 or whatever the comparison would be, I just, you got me. Now, the real question for me is what advantage the dual core nature of these latest Intel Core Duo 2 kinds of chips, whether that actually has the advantages that they claim that they have, because obviously a CPU is not an island. A CPU has to talk to memory a lot, right? And these days, especially in big processing environments, you need to have quite a bit of memory to send information to. And then you get into questions of, well, how quickly can it get to that memory? And how well will it remember where that information was stashed? Like, which memory bank is it in? Things like that. And that's a real issue. And one of the things that Deep Geek is saying is he's wondering about, like, used G5 computers. Because, I mean, let's face it, the power PCs, if you're going to get a power PC, it's probably going to be a Mac. I mean, yeah, sure, there's the PlayStation, but I'm not really quite sure how, you know, fast that is as such, in terms of, you know, being a render, an effective render farm. And I know that TerraSoft, formerly TerraSoft, the Yellow Dog Linux people, I think they're called Fixstar now. I know that they do clusters with PlayStations, and so, I mean, something must be working. I wouldn't know about it myself, because I haven't actually done it. I would wonder, because, I mean, as far as I know, the PlayStations have kind of a limited amount of memory that you can even, you know, it's not really expandable, so I'm not too sure about that. But I guess if it's just a render farm, you wouldn't really need to do that much with memory in theory. But, yeah, the whole Intel Core Duo thing, you know, in benchmarks that I've done, I have found unquestionably the, you know, multiple single G5 chips performing better, like, let's say, like, 8-core G5 computer performing better in the long run than, you know, what should be a faster Intel Core Duo chip or chips. So, you know, there's some question about the effectiveness of that. So that I will say. And, I mean, honestly, I have no problem with PowerPC chips. I've used them most of my life, I guess. So, you know, I mean, until fairly recently, they were the chip that I used. And I was quite happy with them, and I found them quite powerful. The G4 chip, to this day, I mean, that's like, to me, that's just a chip that I really like. I feel very comfortable with the G4 chip. It's a very fast chip. I've always been happy with its performance, and it continues to perform really well. I've had G4s in towers, in laptops with integrated graphics, and in laptops with a dedicated graphic card. Very, very happy with the G4 chip. G5s I've had a little less experience with, but G4, in terms of just being like a really nice, stable, fast chip, I've been really happy with it. And one point that Deep Geek brings up is that why aren't there more architectures to choose from. You know, we, like right now, we really kind of have, largely, you've got basically AMD and Intel. Now, yeah, there's ARM, there's Atom processors, I guess, you know, and there is PowerPC out there, but it's not necessarily, it's clearly largely AMD Intel. It's clearly, that's the dominating kind of architecture. And he asks whether it's really worth getting any more exotic than that at this point. And yeah, honestly, probably not. You know, I'm, even running PowerPC sometimes gets on my nerves simply because so much out there is built already for you for the Intel or the x86 kind of setup. And you know, yeah, there's a lot of stuff in the PowerPC repos for both Fedora and Debian. You can get by pretty well with it. I mean, honestly, it's usually not a problem. But at the same time, you know, it's one of those things where, yeah, it's fine until you want that one thing really quick and you realize, oh, that's not in the repo. I'm going to have to build that from source, aren't I? And then you go through the whole how well can you compile test. So, yeah, I mean, sometimes getting exotic architecture, for me, doesn't seem quite worth it. And then it's a trade-off, you know, if I'm looking at a free laptop or something, and it's got some kind of exotic architecture, like a PowerPC chip, suddenly it becomes worth having a PowerPC chip because it's going to be a free laptop, you know? So it's like one of those sort of, it's just like, what's the better deal, the free laptop, or would you rather hold out for an Intel chip? You know, well, probably just take the free laptop. But unfortunately, yeah, I'm not really too learned about the whole risk aspect of things. I wish I was. I wish I knew more about that sort of thing. But I don't. Let's see, what else have I got in mail? Ron emailed me. Now, some of this, I think, is actually technically, I think this is technically email for Linux Cranks, which is a show that I do on Saturdays at, like, I think 12 o'clock midnight Eastern Time, 11 p.m. Central Time. So I think I'm probably cheating at this point and kind of reading some listener feedback from that show rather than from my own show. But now that I have everything pretty much, a lot of people are emailing me at klaatu@linuxcranks.info. because I told them not to use my Gmail account anymore. I'm just gonna, and Linux Cranks, every time I try to read email, they're not into it. So I'm taking this for myself. This one came from a guy named Ron, who actually we had kind of theorized was some kind of bot or something because he was emailing so many things to so many different people. But I think he's just someone who likes to email because he was really talking to me. He gave, you know, it wasn't just like form emails. It was real stuff. So thanks, Ron, for emailing. And so Ron was saying that he was having a problem with Amarok in his Fedora 10 install, and he couldn't get basically MP3s to play, if I recall correctly. Unfortunately, I don't use Amarok. I use MPlayer, and that just kind of plays everything. Or I use VLC, but mainly MPlayer. But I do know that Amarok has the ability to talk to a variety of backends, and so I told him to look into just using a backend for Amarok that would support MP3, which, you know, in Fedora is a bit of a hack because they don't support MP3 out of the box, because in Fedora, as they say, freedom is a feature, not a bug. So you don't get MP3 support. So what he ended up doing, and he figured all this stuff out on his own, really, I told him to try different backends, and then he took it from there, which was pretty cool. And this is actually informative, because not using Amarok, I just don't, you know, I don't really think about it that often. But this is good to know. So what he did was he went and installed MPG321, which is the MPEG 3 decoder. He installed the GStreamer plugins, the Phonon backend GStreamer plugin, which I believe took in the dependency GStreamer-plugins-base, but that was a dependency that it took on its own, I guess. And he's saying that, from what he can tell, Amarok seems to need the Phonon/GStreamer packages and then it solved the problem without changing any of the other Amarok settings. He's getting two loud audio pops during the boot sequence, which kind of is weird. It sounds like something's trying to take over his sound card, maybe, and not really doing it right. I think that in Fedora, the default setup of it, and this is what I was telling him, is to use Xine, X-I-N-E, and they compile that without the MP3 support. So basically what he did was, you know, swap out the Xine backend for, you know, something else. So he also recommends a distro to me called SourceMage Linux. He says that it's source-based, like Gentoo, and it has a very interesting package management system and scripting environment, which is really kind of cool sounding. I had not heard of it before, but, you know, I'll probably try it out at some point, and if I do, I'll report on it. I got an email from Elon from Scale, and he probably didn't really mean for me to read this out loud, but I don't care. It's email. It's listener feedback, technically. And again, I think I'm stealing feedback from the Linux cranks. I really doubt that he even knows that I exist, but he says that he would like for us to... No, he says me, actually. So he's talking to me, but I don't think it's on... Yeah, it's definitely not... it's definitely not on... he's definitely not talking about the bad apples. But that's fine. I don't know how so many people know about Linux Cranks. It's unbelievable to me that so many people know about that show. I've been doing bad apples for, like, a year, and Linux Cranks just kind of popped onto the scene, and suddenly everyone's talking to them. But anyway, we're hoping that we can play their audio promo on Linux Cranks, and if we do, our listeners will get a discount code, which you've probably already heard on shows like Linux Void and things like that, because that's kind of... people are already playing that, you know? So, that's cool. You know, Scale, I talked at Scale last year on video something or another, and that was neat. It was a fun experience. Met a lot of people. I was there with the Ubuntu booth as well. It was a lot of fun. It was good, clean Linux fun. And I would love to go back, but I'm not in that area anymore, so it's probably not going to happen. But I know that Larry from Going Linux will be there. He had actually submitted a talk for it, and I guess they turned him down, which offends us all greatly, I'm sure. You know, he goes there every year, I think he said, and, you know, lots of people will be there, and it's a fun time, so if you can get down there, definitely go. Who knows, maybe I will play a Scale promo on this show sometime. Even though he didn't ask me to. Ron, again, sent me an email. I told you this guy likes to email people. He sent me an email. It's just a thing off of the Google Reader, like the RSS feed. It's really interesting, though. If you go to montanalinux.org, the Tilts guys had this guy on their show recently. But one of the screencasts that this guy from montanalinux.org did is how to build a Fedora 10 remix, which is just really, 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 really cool. If you've ever wanted to just custom design your own distribution, you could do worse than just remixing Fedora. Now, I know that there's remastering Ubuntu. Don't know how easy or hard it is, but the remixing of Fedora is pretty manageable from what I can tell. I have yet to do it. I intend to do it at some point to make kind of a multimedia kind of thing, but it's definitely a neat screencast. That's montanalinux.org. The Swiss Lotto emailed me. Again, I don't know if this is to the bad apples or Linux Cranks, but apparently I have won 750,000 euros, which I found astonishing since I didn't actually enter anything. But apparently it's just, I got lucky, and I just have to send them my name, my address, my marital status, my age, my sex, I believe they mean gender, nationality, country of residence, occupation, phone number, fax number, and some other information. And they will, I guess, at some point transfer the amount of 750,000 euros to my bank account, which, you know, I find just really, really exciting. And just can't wait for that money to hit my account for sure. And then Rain de Durwater from France has emailed me a couple of times. Some of it was really interesting. Some of it was just wacky. If you go to the technology, where's their website? It's a podcast called the Technology Liberation Front, which, I mean, I don't see how you can not listen to that podcast. I actually haven't listened to it yet. I just haven't had a chance, but I'm definitely going to go there. It sounds really fascinating. I think episode 38, the Google kerfuffle, edge caching and net neutrality. So that sounds really, really interesting. They say in several of our previous podcasts, episodes 34, 35, and 37, we've discussed what we've called the Comcast kerfuffle, which was the controversy surrounding the steps Comcast took to manage BitTorrent traffic on its networks. Critics call it a violation of net neutrality principles, while Comcast and others call it sensible network management, which of course is nonsense. It's not sensible network management. It is not net neutrality. It's looking at what you're doing and penalizing you if they happen to not like it. So, not cool, right? So, stop by there. I will try to dig up. For some reason, there's not a very easy link to the actual Technology Liberation Front podcast here, which you would think would be something they would feature in a blog posting about it. Technology Liberation Front. There it is. Yeah, just go to techliberation.com and check that podcast out. I haven't really heard it yet, but I like it. I like it already. It looks really cool. You'll see why I like it. Just go to that site and just look at the top of it. It's really cool. I don't know, it might be a little bit too political for me. I do believe that there's probably some interesting stuff on here to check out, so check it out. And then finally, I had a lot of entries, about the coffee contest that I said we'd do for the, you know, the Chess Griffin-inspired sort of holiday contest to see who will win a bag of coffee that I really like. Now, again, this coffee is, it's called Sawtooth Mountain Mud, and I really don't know much about it. I don't know where it comes from, I don't know if it's a blend, I know nothing about it except that it's sold in one place, in Joshua Tree, California, in a little cafe called Water Canyon Cafe. And I don't live anywhere near there, so I had to have someone pick up. I got them to get me like 10 pounds of this coffee. I mean, there's a lot of good coffee out there. You know, the Kona is a really good coffee, and I'm not, honestly, I've been really digging Kona lately, like a lot. So, you know, this stuff, I don't, you know, if you drink it next to another really good coffee, I don't know how outstanding this is. This is a fairly mild coffee. It's not that bold, you know. Make it strong, you know, drip it, do a drip coffee kind of thing with it. I think that's probably the best way to do it. Either that or make it into a cappuccino or an espresso. And trust me, it can be, it's mild, but I wouldn't say rich, but it's a solid coffee, you know. It's mild, but beautiful. So we're up, we're going for this coffee. This is the contest. This is what we have donated our hard-earned money to, you know, in order to get. So here we go. There's a twist here. I got so many responses to this that I couldn't decide on just one. So, I'm doing two. Alright, so drum roll, number one, is someone that you know and I know as Hammer. This is Hammer, who has been listening to my podcast for a while. He's been a guest on Fedora Reloaded as kind of the Mythdora guru. And he donated $30 to the developer of Mythdora, because the product is so darn good. He uses Mythdora every day and loves it. And he sent me a photo of his snowbound house in the very, very cold North Dakota state that he lives in. And let that be a lesson to us all. You know, you send a photograph with your entry, it gets people's attention. I mean, that's a lot of snow in this photograph. it made me really feel for this guy. I thought, this guy, aside from donating $30, which really is the highest amount that anyone told me that they'd donated, not only did he donate 30 bucks to Mythdora, but he has to shovel all this snow. The guy's gotta be freezing. I mean, I don't think it would be humane not to send him a bag of coffee. That's just my feeling on the subject. And so he's gonna get a bag of coffee. Now, I don't know when it will arrive, because I don't know if the post office, I know that they're very dedicated, but I find myself wondering if they can actually get through all that snow in order to get him the coffee. What I'll probably end up doing is just commissioning a helicopter to fly it over and kind of drop it, you know, from the sky. And that way he can just step outside and kind of, like, try to catch it as it falls. Might be the most effective way of doing it. Now, the other one is from yet another longtime listener, and trust me, I'm not playing favorites here. These were the two highest amounts. Now, they could be lying, totally. They could definitely be lying. But I don't know. I'm a trusting person, and these guys say that they did this amount, so I'm just gonna trust them. I'm gonna believe them. And if this guy's email would open, I would be able to tell you exactly what his very witty email says. Here it goes. It's been opening up in a window that I didn't see. So it is open. And it says, 20 bucks to Blender Foundation. This is Digsit, so you know, you surely know Digsit. He sent me a hilarious message on another contest that I did, and it was really funny. It was like a letter from the future. I think that was, yeah, I'm sure that was Digsit who did that. So anyway, but Digsit, yeah, so he's a longtime listener. So, well, he's the original listener. He's the guy who was, you know, he goes way back, so he's cool. But the fact is that he also did $20, and that was the second most amount of money. So Hammer for 30, Digsit for 20. To the Blender Foundation. I'm sure to win, as all those other liars at OLF who said they listen in Og will never know about the contest. Now, I find that quite amusing, because it's funny, you know, because one does wonder how many people know about the contest since I switched to Og only. Could be that, you know, I lost some listeners there. But obviously, all of us who are now listening know better, and we all like Og. And he continues to say, Og is the truth, and it will win me 1 pound of really good coffee. Digs it. So, the guy's got a point. You know, he gave 20 bucks to Blender. I like Blender. We all like Blender, as we've established. Og is good. It still is good. And I've gotten a couple of comments. So now I'm segueing, I guess, into an update on the Og-only feed of the show. I got a few comments. I've gotten a few comments over IRC about, you know, it's kind of a pain to download the Og version and convert it over to, you know, MP3 or MPEG-4, whatever, for the for their media player. And I'm not at all trying to be a snob or anything like that. I mean, I am a codec snob. But I'm not a snob who says, oh, if you're not listening to, you know, whatever I think you should be listening to, you know, then you don't get to, you know, I don't want you listening to my show. I'm not trying to say that at all. I'm just saying that, well, as I said in the previous episode, you know, if we all sit around and support Og, and if we go the extra step to convert the Og if we have to, I just think it's better. I think it's better for everyone, because that just doesn't give anyone else the option of the MP3. Or the MPEG-4, or the MPEG anything, or the AAC even. It's the free codec that we're trying to promote, and I think that, I don't know, I just think it's a good thing, and there's not, I don't actually know of that many shows out there with only an Og feed, so I kind of like the idea that there's a show out there that's just in Og. You can't get it any other way. It's in a free codec, that's what it's in. So I think if we all kind of band together behind that idea, I think it speaks. I don't know who it speaks to or what it says, but I think it says something. And so that's why we're doing it. And for everyone still listening, I really appreciate it. And anyone who doesn't want to go to the trouble of downloading the OGG file and converting it for their media player, you know, I encourage you to either just download the OGG and listen to it on your computer if you have the time. And I know that sometimes that just doesn't work out with your daily life. Maybe the only time you're sitting in front of the computer, you know, enough to listen to a show would be at home, and to listen to my show would mean that you would get to, you know, ignore your family or something, which would not be desirable. I would not want you to do that. So, you know, if it doesn't work out, oh well, you know, it's fine. We'll meet up on another show. It's not a big deal. But for everyone else, I think, who either can listen to OGG on their media player, or whose work day does allow them to just listen to the OGG file on their computer, or who can easily transcode the file into MPEG for themselves, I just think that's, you know, you're taking one for the team when you're doing that, because you are transcoding it, and you are making it so that people who amble by the Bad Apple Linux cast, they don't see the MP3 feed. They don't see that as an option, because it's not an option. And they will see that a community, you know, all 11 or 12 of us listening to the show, a community is formed around just an OGG feed, a free codec. And I think that is something. I think that's a powerful statement. So I encourage everyone to continue to kind of stand behind that, bear with it. You know, eventually, either the media players will start supporting OGG, or your workday might start supporting you sitting in front of the computer listening to a podcast, or something like that. But I think it's a powerful statement to just not have an MP3 or an AAC feed and just go the free route entirely. I think that's really cool. So let's do that. And Hammer and Digsit, feel free to email me if you hear this, and I'll probably email you as well. Email me your address, and email me whether you need the coffee ground or not. If you need it ground, I will grind it for you. If you do not need it ground, I will send it to you in a whole bean. I would prefer to send it to you a whole bean, because that is, you know, the purest way of doing things. But if you need it ground because you just don't have easy access, especially you, Hammer, being snowed in as you are, if you need it ground, just let me know and I will grind it for you. Not a problem. I have grinders to use, no problem. And thank you, everyone else, for your submission. If I'd had enough coffee for everyone who submitted, I would send it out, really. It's just, we kind of said the top, you know, the top donator. So I took two, and that's all I can spare. I mean, I only have 10 pounds of this coffee. I can't give it all away. Now, come on. And I think that's about it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I know there's a lot of listener feedback and updates kind of going on. Not a whole lot of techie stuff in this one, but certainly a good post-holiday show, I'm sure. Next time we'll get more technical and do something really cool. Okay, thank you for listening, and I will see you next time. One more thing I forgot to mention. A little show called Hacker Public Radio. It's been around for, I guess, about a year now or something like that. Started out as a BinRev project, and it was a daily show of tech and geek kind of stuff. Really, really, really cool idea. The thing about it is that it needs a lot of people to keep it going and to keep it interesting. If you get 5 people doing episodes every day, you know, the topics start to wear a bit thin and the perspectives start to become fairly repetitive. You can only hear me talk about something that I moderately know something sort of about so long. And you can only hear about, you know, the things that interest Deep Geek so many times. You know, the more, not to say that either of us are boring or, you know, not interesting to hear, but I mean, it's even more interesting if you're hearing, you know, a lot of different people. And there are a lot of different hosts, and there, you know, we get a good variety on Hacker Public Radio. But one thing about Hacker Public Radio is that it's a great outlet for a show, for someone who needs to, who wants to convey some kind of tip or some kind of knowledge or some kind of interest to a lot of people. And, you know, a lot of people have said to me over time, you know, hey, Klaatu, thinking about starting a podcast, blah, blah, blah. And I say to them, and I really mean this, I mean, literally, if Hacker Public Radio had been around when I started The Bad Apples, I probably would not have started, well, I would have started The Bad Apples because I didn't know a whole lot, but let's say if we imagine that I started The Bad Apples at season 2, where I really went Linux, if Hacker Public Radio had been around at that point, I would have not started The Bad Apples. I would have just done Hacker Public Radio, because it's a great outlet. You can get all of your podcasting out without the scheduling commitment that a normal podcast demands of you. And the episodes don't necessarily need to be too long, don't necessarily need to be too short. There's just a whole lot of variety there. You can do whatever you want to. It's really, really neat. And it's such a cool show. The variety is just priceless. You never know what you're going to hear on there. You might hear about something really, really hacky and cool, or you might hear something insightful and poignant. You might hear something funny. You know, it's just, you never know what you're going to get, but it's always really interesting. And the hosts that have been on so far are just fantastic. I don't know of really any episode. I don't remember one episode that I've ever stopped or ever felt, oh, that was a waste of time. You know, it's just, they're really fascinating. So my point is that I am now I guess I'm on the staff, or I'm an evil minion or something of the Hacker Public Radio crew. So the posse, I guess. So I'm supposed to promote it, I guess. So I'm promoting it. So listen to it, but even more, choose a topic that you know about and just give it a shot. Give a shot at recording an episode about that subject. It doesn't have to be complex. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to be an expert. It's just something that you know about that someone else doesn't. And you can figure that probably someone else out there, if you just learned it recently yourself, or if you can think back to a time when you didn't know about it, and then at some point you did know about it, someone is at that point where they don't know about it, you know? And this is why I do segments on things like, you know, like how to remote, you know, how to VNC into a computer. I mean, it's not rocket science. And yet, for a long time, you might not have known how to do that on Linux. And then suddenly you hear someone talking about it, and you say, hey, I should try that, and you try it, and now you know. So give it a shot if you want to. If you know anything about anything, you got to figure there's someone else out there who doesn't know about it and who would love to hear about it. So record an episode, shoot me an email at klaatu@hackerpublicradio.org. I will get the email. If you just record it, if you want me to edit it and throw some music on the front and the back, I will do that for you. It's no problem. I do audio fairly often. It's not a problem for me to throw some music on the end and the beginning and cut out some bad takes or something if you want. No worries. You know, if you want to edit it a little bit here and there, you can, whatever. Just email me, let me know that you've got it, send it in, and chances are it's probably going to be very cool and insightful. And I would love to hear all 11 of my listeners to do an episode. Now, luckily, I don't know exactly who those 11 people are, so if you don't do it, that's okay. But think about it. Consider it. It's a good project. It's a great way to contribute, and it's fun. And it's I'm sure everyone will love to hear what you have to say. So give it a shot, and see how it goes for you.